And welcome back to the Coast to Coast to Coast podcast. I am your host, Chad, and I am, of course, joined here with Chip.
Hello!
And Jim.
Fuck Stefanski!
And over on the East Coast, Dale.
Hey, guys, it's good to see you.
I'm just kidding. Obviously, it's just me here alone today. I was pretty much going to skip this one. I think we all were for different reasons. But I had a couple things that were sort of time dependent. So I am jumping on for a solo pod for now. And maybe Chip might be able to jump in a little bit here. We will see. So to start us off, we have some recaps for the games this week. I figured I would get these in because by the time we record the next pod, they will be terribly irrelevant. We were going to go over our season predictions, but I got to be honest, I don't remember what they are. And then some coach firings and some Browns-related news and roster information. So we'll start with the game breakdowns, and let's get right into it. First things first, going in order here, was the Raiders and Bengals game, which I think Saturday, I guess afternoon, would have been one of the most controversial playoff games I've seen in a while, but also one of the only playoff games probably worth watching. So I'm sure most of the listeners watched at least a majority of them. I hope you caught this one. The Bengals, who I would love to root for because of their story and how long it's been since they've been a legitimate winner, just can't do it. So I just kept finding myself trying to root for the Raiders, who I felt were actually the underdog in this scenario. The Raiders were my AFC team that didn't belong, and that was a tough one because the Bengals were right there with them, being a team that wasn't in playoff contention for most of the year and got nice and hot at the end of the year while the rest of the AFC North crumbled. So it was a pretty fair matchup for a first round. Give it to the Bengals for winning that division and ending up in that position in the first place. Overall, tight game. I brought up earlier, it was controversial. The Bengals ended up being able to pull it off 26-19 with a one-score win. And in reality, it was pretty crazy because the big controversial call that set off all the referee drama was that touchdown pass that was actually whistled dead somewhere towards the late end of the play. So for anybody that did see it and didn't understand it or didn't see it, what basically happened was Burrow was running towards the sideline, jumped and made a throw into the end zone. One of the referees very obviously blew the whistle thinking he stepped out of bounds when he jumped and that the play was dead before the throw. Subsequently, Tyler Boyd caught the pass for a touchdown and the referees gathered, chatted it up, and came out and said there was no problem with the play. Of course, they didn't make any mistake, and it was a touchdown. Now, it's kind of crazy because the realist in me says, you know, that doesn't really technically decide the game, even though it was a real close one. And I don't believe the whistle had an impact on the call, although we'll never be sure if the cornerback heard it and slowed on his coverage thinking the play was over or anything like that. But because we won't know that, the correct answer was to say there was an accidental whistle. We are going to replay, I believe it was third down, and that was the correct call. We know it was a huge mistake because the NFL has come out later and said that this officiating crew will no longer be participating in the remainder of the playoffs because of controversy, which we can only gauge was mainly surrounding that play. Now, there was other rough calls in the game. It did look like this game was favoring the Bengals in most ways. I got to hand it to the Raiders for hanging in there. But the reality is the Bengals are moving on and there's no going back. So I feel for your Raiders fans if you're griping at the TV. I think it's fair to say if you look at the ongoing games after this, I don't know. It's hard to believe that either of these teams are going to match up with their next opponents, but we'll find out. The second game was the Patriots and the Bills, and I am pretty sad that Jim doesn't get to be on for this portion because, man, was this his dream scenario. The Bills came out and absolutely demolished the Patriots to a level where I could have not imagined. The game was in freezing cold temperatures, much like we've seen, I feel like, in multiple games with the Bills, but once this season already with the Patriots. And this time, as opposed to last time, it really looks like the Bills were ready to go and the Patriots just fumbled in a way that we are not used to seeing. The score was outrageous. The Bills ended up winning 47-17, and honestly, that almost feels closer than it was. There was no point in that game following the first two scores by Buffalo where the Patriots were even there. And as a NFL fan, anybody who's watched the Patriots could probably have watched them get up by 21 or 28 and thought they could come back. But the realization of the idea that Tom Brady is no longer there and that this super well-coached team with a young, high-potential quarterback is just not the Patriots that they were when Tom Brady was there. And Bills fans have to be rejoicing, not only for just this win, but for the idea that this Patriots dynasty, as it's been for so long, just might have crumbled in front of them the way Browns fans were cheering of the idea that the Steelers dynasty in the AFC North could have crumbled last playoffs. So we'll see how the Patriots respond. I am not counting them out in the future, but man, does Buffalo look as good this weekend as they've looked at any point in this season and maybe last year. If they can keep that going, holy cow, look out. I'm sure Jim is not quite ready to be as optimistic as I am, but it is hard not to feel pretty good about that. Moving on, the next day had a couple stinkers and then a really nice game between the Cowboys and the Niners, but we're going to start with one of the stinkers here for the Eagles. The Buccaneers handled them 31-15. It reminds me of that Bills game in a way, with the idea that there was no point in the game where I thought the Eagles looked like they were really competing on a playoff level. Which just reminds you sometimes that in the playoffs, this wild card round, you're getting top seeds, especially with only one bye, playing teams that are legitimate Super Bowl contending teams. And this was one of those. The Eagles just looked outmatched from the start. And despite getting a couple scores as the games went on, the Buccaneers looked highly in control. They looked like they are rolling. Tom Brady looks like he is, sitting pretty compared to where the Patriots are sitting right now. And, they're going to be contending for the trophy again. Playoffs, they got a lot of younger guys on that team that may use the experience, especially the quarterback, because we've heard time and time again that preseason speed is different from regular season speed, and playoff speed and intensity is just different than the regular season. So maybe in the long run, it's good for them, but this game was pretty much just a playoff practice for the Buccaneers. Next up was that 49ers Cowboys game we talked about. This was a game where the 49ers looked like they were in control for a majority of the game, but they unfortunately let the Cowboys keep themselves in it pretty much till the end. They were able to pull it off with the help of a pretty nice run game and just enough control from the quarterback position to, oh my God, I hate that I'm even going to say this, but manage the game, because I hate the game manager term, especially in the playoffs, but it's sort of what it feels like sometimes with Jimmy Garoppolo, who has done this before and controls this team in a way that they need in order to win, but doesn't look like he can carry them at any point. Regardless, it was worth watching because Jimmy Garoppolo will be on my list, as we'll talk about later, of potential quarterbacks on the market that the Browns could or maybe should be looking into. And spoiler alert, he'll be one of the guys on my list because if nothing else, at least we know he can handle getting a team to the playoffs and handle getting at least a good team to the Super Bowl. And I just can't argue with that at this point, depending on what's going on with our quarterback in Cleveland. But realistically, I'm hoping, obviously, Baker makes it back. But he did do what he's done in the past with this team, and he helped to control the game. Unfortunately, he got hurt in it. Through this week, I've heard he's practicing, but he had a hand injury, and he's going to be limited. This could hurt him, or maybe it could give him back up some playoff experience. We'll see where that goes. But he is overshadowed by the fact that Nick Bosa, one of the fantastic Bosas, was hurt in this game. Nick got hurt, and it looks like he might be the more serious injury. And he, as much as the quarterback's a very important player, he is as important to that defense, I think, as just about any player on offense. He's just that dominant of a pass rusher. So the 49ers will limp into this week's game, and we will see what they're able to do. They're kind of playing with house money at this point, so maybe they've got something in them. We know Shanahan is able to scheme just about as good as any coach in the league, and they're going to make something happen. Next up, I think most Browns fans were waiting the most for this matchup, and I laughed with some of the guys earlier about it because one of the announcers, and I think accidentally, it may have been one of the Collinsworths or it could have been Tariq. I can't remember, to be honest, but one of the announcers I remember saying in the pregame show something about, and stay tuned for the Kansas City Chiefs facing off against Ben Roethlisberger in his last game. And all I could do, I texted a bunch of people about it. I thought it was so funny and foreshadowing because I think it just nailed that this game was almost a foregone conclusion. The Steelers are no match for the Kansas City Chiefs, who dominated them 42-21. And again, at one point of the game, it looked even worse than that. The announcement was a bit of a mistake, I'm sure. Just a subliminal blip, but it turns out that that is probably the way it's going. Ben Roethlisberger probably goes out on a pretty big downer in his final playoff game, and I mean, I don't know what to say. I guess he's lucky to be there because he didn't help this team that much this year, and they really kind of just trudged and lucked and I guess toughed their way into the playoffs. And they're just not at that level that the NFL and Cleveland fans and definitely Pittsburgh fans are used to, where they can come in as a wild card and really lay it to anybody. But the Kansas City Chiefs, led by Patrick Mahomes' brilliant performance, really worked them out. The Chiefs look balanced. The Chiefs look like they can surprisingly run the ball. Obviously, Mahomes can get the ball to anyone on the field at almost any play, and he looks like he's ready to compete. I'm really not that I'm, you know, counting things up for the Bengals ahead of time, or even the Titans for that matter, but it looks to me, despite the Titans having the number one seed, like the Chiefs and the Bills are destined to battle this one out. And so we'll see. We'll see. But that was a pretty big drubbing. I don't want to be one of the Cleveland fans that is more excited about a rival team losing than their own team winning. But it will be interesting to see where this leads the Steelers. Are they finding a quarterback? Are they going to be competing with Cleveland for free agents, quarterbacks? Are they going to be looking into the draft? I don't think they have a hot chance there, but they've made gold out of underrated players before. And we'll kind of see where the Steelers go as time goes by. Last but certainly not least, the Rams, who I was nervously cheering for, took on the Cardinals, who are just a monster team this year, but man, did they limp into the playoffs, and it showed. The Rams essentially dominated them throughout the game. At one point, I think it was 21-0, and the Rams have what we all consider one of just the toughest defenses, especially defensive fronts, lined up against the Cardinals on the Cardinals' own 2-yard line, which seems like it was the story of the first half of that game. The Cardinals just seemed like they were playing behind the end zone on every drive, and the Rams certainly took advantage, rushing Kyler Murray and forcing bad play after bad play with just dominating pressure. Now, the line didn't do Kyler Murray any favors because they had a tall task, but they were just dominated. The Cardinals had a lot of injuries, and to add to that, Buda Baker left the game on a stretcher, which was a bit of a terrifying scene. You know, the type of hit he took in that game, if anyone was still watching by that point, was just brutal. And it caused basically, keep an eye out for this when you're watching football, it caused basically this arm reaction, which is indicative of a head or spinal cord injury where either the arms just stiffen under you or one of them extends from the shoulder and the other one flexes at the elbow. And that was his motion indicating definitely a head injury of some level, traumatic brain injury, and that includes concussions. But those ones are scary when the guy doesn't just get up woozy, but the body actually has a physical reaction to that, and the guy's ending there stiff and then limp on the ground after getting put on the stretcher is just, man, it's the type of stuff that just makes you just swallow your heart for a second for these guys. But he was able to wiggle his fingers, wiggle his toes. He was able to move his hands enough to try to take his gloves off while they were getting him off the field on the stretcher. And that doesn't, to me, negate the severity of that injury he just had, but it is a good first sign for him. I would expect if the Cardinals were moving on, he would be out in a pretty severe concussion protocol, probably for a couple weeks. That was just a really big hit. And he's going to be feeling that one for a while. I wish him the best. I hope it's okay and it doesn't have any long-term implications. But it was just another Cardinals who just, I felt like all season belonged. And as the season came to a close, I think it was pretty clear to see, number one, that without DeAndre Hopkins, Kyler Murray was a little bit, well, that offense was a little bit different of an offense. And it had some remnants of a much better start to the Cleveland Browns season, where just injuries mounted at important positions. And even depth ended up getting injured, and there was just not a recovery for them, and it's just not their year. I'm not going to hold this against Kyler Murray. I'm sure a lot of people are. I was already seeing things online questioning. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, is he's too short again. You know, the guy kind of dominates his position for some of the season and a couple of years in the NFL, and then, boom, he ends up in a terrible situation, has a terrible game to his own fault, but as a result of also a really tough situation against a really tough team on the road, and all of a sudden, I don't know, people are questioning whether the kid can play any football. We'll see. My bets are still on him, but that's sort of where we are in NFL fandom. It's just kind of how it is. So that brings a close to the schedule for this week. That was the main thing I wanted to cover, just because I felt like if we didn't go over it, next week comes and that's all sort of irrelevant. Going on to next week, there's some more big games that we're going to be getting into, and it will be fun to talk with the actual rest of the guys about the new games coming up, as they're a little bit more impactful now, because they're everyone who's still in it, including the Bengals, have now won a playoff game, and you know deserve to be there. So it's going to be fun. The only other thing I wanted to touch on regarding that game was two quick things. One, Browns fans are probably just writhing in pain after watching Odell Beckham Jr. go off for what might have been his first, I don't know. I guess people are talking him up because he scored a lot of touchdowns since he went to the Rams. And for everybody that is in my fantasy league, yes, he's the truth. He's back. Give me a first rounder for him. But to anybody who's not, I still expect him to be pretty good. But I think he was building up to this game, and I think this is the first time I've seen it where he really looked like a great player. You know, before this game, he had a lot of dropped passes. He did score some touchdowns, but he was having games where he had three catches for 23 yards and a touchdown, and that's just not that dominant of a performance for him. He may be benefiting right now from being the second receiver on a team, because make no mistake about it, Cooper Kupp is that team's top target and will stay that way. But OBJ was back enough to make you shake your head and wish the Browns could have figured something out. Other stories from that game, a big one is Matt Stafford, when put in a pretty good situation, maybe a quarterback that can get you towards or to a Super Bowl. And it was good to see him actually come through, because I had my doubts more than anybody this season that he may just not have it, which I think we define as somebody who can score a lot of points, throw a lot of yards, but when it's clutch time, or when the game is on the line, or when the pressure is on, you just don't know if certain guys can overcome that. And it takes a lot of guys years, and some guys never get there. So we don't know for sure, because they dominated so much and he looked like he was just having a ball, but he won a playoff game, and that's a better start, and it's a little bit more info than we had before. And lastly on that game, wow, Cam Akers. I cannot wait to get Chip in here to talk about that. This guy had a miraculous recovery, and I'm not going to get into it today because I really want to do it with the guys, but two things. One, wow, I just can't believe he's playing to this level. And he looks almost better than he was before he got hurt, to be honest. I don't know. He's fresh, that's for sure. It may be what a guy looks like when he doesn't have the miles on him and the beat up from the entire season. But I was shocked that he played that much. I was screaming for him to get out of the game after the Rams were up by 3 or 4 touchdowns, because I do not want to see this kid go down with some kind of strain or other injury as a result of not being in shape for these hits and this workload. because prior to this, he had a couple carries and just wasn't much. So that's a big, big turn up from what he had been doing coming off that injury. So, hey, I'm wishing him the best. But I was nervous. I think I was texting people, what are they doing? Get him out of there. And I can't wait to get into some of the details I heard. So stay tuned for next week's pod about how his surgery went, what was done differently from past surgeries, and how his rehab was done, and what the Rams invested to make sure he came back. And I'll just say it's nice to be a top pick, because in most situations, this is not going to happen. So, all right, moving on. This is really weird to do without somebody else jumping in, by the way, and talking this much. I'm getting a little bit parched here. So we'll wrap this up. The main story we wanted to cover were some of the coach firings. We won't get into detail with them because we are just me and I don't want to do it. But just in case anybody didn't know, the Texans fired David Culley after only 1 year. I think it's relevant, and we'll probably get into the next year because it was a big reason I heard why Deshaun Watson wanted out of that program. One, because they hired that coach without really bringing him in to be involved at all. And you can think what you want about that, but he was pissed. And he also didn't want that coach and wanted out of there even before, and that sort of solidified it. And I don't know. The guy did nothing for me, and I didn't like his attitude or the things I was hearing involving him in the locker room and some of the guys. So, you know, no love lost there. The Giants fired Joe Judge. Honestly, I do think he underperformed. I don't think he was given an easy task because I don't love the Giants roster. I don't even love their lead players and superstars as much as other people. But, you know, he was given a tall task. He talked a really big game coming out, and I warned people not to get too hyped up about that because winning the press conference is so irrelevant to how you're going to do as a head coach. And we'll see if he winds up back in New England, which is just a New England type of thing. And maybe their offensive coordinator leaves because he's due for sure, and Joe Judge ends up back there working towards another Super Bowl. The Vikings ended up firing Mike Zimmer and GM Rick Spielman. Some Ohio connection there in a lot of different ways, obviously with Spielman, but also with Mike Zimmer fired and his staff gone. That is a lot of guys who our current coach has worked with and a couple guys who he probably trusts. He said he's planning on bringing the whole coaching staff back, but we'll see if this changes anything in terms of him bringing in additional guys that he knows, or if this shifts around anyone in terms of position coach moving around. Man, do I wish this meant he was going to bring in an offensive coordinator or a different quarterback coach, leading us to shift our guy from quarterback coach in Van Pelt to offensive coordinator. I just really think he needs some help there, and this might be an opportunity to bring somebody in that he trusts to help him. Moving on, the Broncos parted ways with Vic Fangio after three seasons where he couldn't seem to bring a winning record. There was a ton of talk about getting him a different quarterback. I think he was strapped without having one, and he's also in a pretty difficult division for the most part, but, you know, he just didn't – you got to progress in this league or you are going to end up on the chopping block, and that's where he's at now. The Broncos find themselves starting over, and although John – that he has been in traditionally, he just, I don't know, he's just living off that Peyton Manning super year, and that may be his legacy as far as post playing years with the Broncos. And I guess that's good enough. I would take it, I suppose, but just doesn't do much for me as far as the moves that that franchise has made since he's been involved. I thought the last three were interesting. I'll just bring up now. The Jaguars obviously fired Urban Meyer earlier this season. That leaves them with a decision on what they want to do with their head coach. And I would imagine they're going to be looking around. They took a chance. They did the Urban Meyer experience, and it was an experiment that Browns fans had been chiming for years. And I'm just glad it happened somewhere else because I didn't believe in it to begin with. You kind of want to root for the guy because of what he did for Ohio State, but it's hard when you just don't believe in him as an NFL coach. And it played out even worse than I had imagined. He ended up with a quarterback who I thought was going to be one of just the greatest young quarterbacks coming in the league, and he absolutely bombed Trevor Lawrence's first year. The team was void of talent, and he had a lot of control over the roster, and he definitely has set them back for who knows how long. Maybe they can pick up the pieces, but it was just a dumpster fire from the beginning. Scandals on and off the field, locker room troubles, players talking to the media and leaking things. It was a mess, and they're going to have to find some way to turn that around. So we'll be keeping an eye on that as time goes on. The Raiders are another one who obviously fired their head coach midseason amongst just as much turmoil and disaster, only just in a different fashion. It was more this guy's past catching up to him. And it really does taint the legacy of John Gruden, who is, I think, one of the more beloved NFL figures of my time. And, I mean, he's probably done. And I got to give kudos to the Raiders for being able to keep that boat afloat enough to make the playoffs. I mean, they didn't have a great record, and they certainly didn't astound anyone, but they almost won a playoff game against the Bengals amid some controversial calls and problems. And it surprises me that they fired him without letting him kind of put together a staff and see if they could continue to grow from that. Maybe they know more than me, but it seems like a coach being able to take that situation and right the ship for more than two or three games while the players are sort of trying to overcome. He's impressive. So Raiders are probably going to be shopping, and we'll see if they hold on to this guy. What is it? Rich, I can't even pronounce his last name. I'm terrible, but Bisaccia. And I don't know, maybe they hold on to him, but they're definitely going to be looking at the market, and we'll see if this guy earns his way on. And then the final coach that I'm interested in, and the most shocking, was Brian Flores. I would like to talk a little bit more about him because I think he's got a bright future somewhere, and I could see him being the head coach out of this group who leaves a head coaching position for another head coaching position, because I thought this guy did wonders with a very volatile situation with a team, with a roster that I don't think has the talent to win the amount of games he won, and with a quarterback position that was flip-flopping all over the place with changes and injuries, and I don't know how much more he could have accomplished. And I think sometimes we judge these guys based on their record alone, which, by the way, wasn't terrible, and we don't look at, you know, is a guy winning games, and is it because he's making the most of the pieces he's given, or is he winning games because he's just given better pieces? You know, you can't expect to win a race with an inferior car, and I think people do. They just want to see who won. They don't care what you did. You take a terrible car, and you are able to keep yourself in the race throughout and finish in the top five. To me, that's much more impressive than finishing two with the best car in the race. I don't know. And it's just the only analogy I can think of. I just feel like he maximized his situation there. And I'm curious to see who, including some of these playoff teams that lose, are going to take a shot at him again, because I think he has earned it. Last on the list today. Well, almost last. I'm gonna quickly go over some Malik McDowell news. Everyone listening to this has probably already heard, but Malik McDowell was arrested in Florida. I don't know if it was this morning or last night, but the news came out this morning. He was arrested in Florida after running into, what was it, a community center naked and attacking a security guard. Don't quote me on the details. I was hearing different stories through the day, and to be honest, I can barely keep straight what was the right one because none of them seemed real. So if you need to see it, and I don't think you do, there's video. I saw it on TMZ Sports. I mean, he comes running into the scene, and I believe this was running out of the building. He's completely butt-ass naked, and he's surrounded by officers who eventually, as a group, have to take him down, cuff and subdue him. The dude was clearly out of his mind. I don't know if we're going to find out he had some psychological breakdown, or more likely to me, probably he was on something that his brain was not ready for. I honestly don't know what type of drug even does that to a person, but I can't imagine someone being able to pull that off without being on drugs. So given this guy's history, and even if he didn't have a history where he was already in a lot of trouble and arrested, I could see this being the final straw, even if incident, and it's not. So I would say that it is safe to assume this guy is never going to play football again. And it's a shame because he's a talented guy who looked like he might have pulled his act together. We're going to do a position breakdown with the guys in this offseason. And we'll actually probably talk about him at that this point. You know, he didn't perform wonderfully this season, but he did have flashes, which as a guy who's essentially a rookie playing his first game action is all you need to see. He's young. He's just turned 25 this year. And so he's a guy I would have brought back with some potential to progress. At this point, his career is done, and hopefully his life is not. Hopefully he gets some kind of help because he clearly needs it. But he will be done with the Browns. You can count on that. And, you know, attacking and resisting arrests, attacking a an officer, essentially, who's trying to arrest him, is going to get him a battery charge and resisting arrest. Obviously, he's running around naked, and there's kids around, so geez, who knows if there's going to be some you know, sexual charges included on it. But attacking a deputy and then resisting arrest as all the officers tried to corral him, it just looks bad in every way. And like we know from the NFL, anything caught on video is unforgivable. So this guy's career is now done. So I don't know. I wish him some hope, and that's about the best I can do. I'm sure the guys agree. And that is the last of the news, I think, today. Next week, we are going to get into the Browns' unrestricted free agents, and we've got some time for that. Just a quick list of guys to be thinking about. David Njoku, Jadeveon Clowney, Harrison is coming up at the end of his deal. Hubbard, who has been injured, so a lot of people have sort of forgot about him, playing swing tackle, is at the end of his contract. Hollywood Higgins, MJ Stewart on the back end, both unrestricted free agents. Walker, who came in and did a pretty decent job stabilizing the linebacker position, he is at the end of his deal, along with Malcolm Smith, who also did a good job filling in spot duty as a veteran at the linebacker position. The other Malik Jackson, was on a short deal, and we'll talk about whether or not we have any reason to think he might be back. and then Tech McKinley and Odenigbo are both defensive ends. McKinley coming off a pretty bad injury, both of who are at the end of a short deal. And we'll see what the Browns have in mind for those guys. Other guys to keep your eye on and who we'll talk about next week are restricted free agent D'Ernest Johnson, who we all kind of fell in love with this season. He is restricted, which means different rules, possible tenders, different compensations, and a chance for the Browns to match offers. So that's a little bit different, but we'll see whether they want to put any investment into him given their running back situation. And then two more players who fall under a little different situation is Jack Conklin, who may need replaced just because of how late in the season, a pretty devastating 8 month to a year to forever injury happened. And Jarvis Landry, who is the most unique guy because he is under contract, but it is pretty much voidable. And he is going to be the topic of conversation. I feel like we may not agree on what to do with him per se. So we'll get into some of those guys next week. And along with some Browns major needs and some cap stuff with Dale, with the broker. Can't wait to hear some of the numbers there and kind of see what that may mean for the Browns shopping days. And I'll let you go with this one last thing. Does anybody else have anything else they want to add? Nope. Just me still. Last but not necessarily least, for anybody who didn't know, Baker Mayfield goes into surgery tomorrow, Wednesday, January 19th, which if you're listening, is probably today. He has a surgery with the head of orthopedics and the team physician for, I believe, the Anaheim Ducks over at Cedars-Sinai, which is a pretty fine hospital in Los Angeles. And I cannot wait to see if Chip is 100% back on board with Baker after the inevitable report comes out that his surgery was successful and that he is going to be just as good as ever when he comes back. And I poke fun at Chip, but I'm hoping that I don't do the same thing because, oh man, am I rooting for the kid to get back and get to himself, get to the old Baker, or at least the Baker we had all hoped to see this year. So that is it for the entire cast of the Coast to Coast to Coast podcast. I'm Chad, closing you out on a solo pod that I hope to never do again. Take care. Like and subscribe. Coast the number 2, Coast X3 on everything. Twitter, Instagram. I'll probably do a TikTok page soon. Who knows? But definitely follow on those. We're on Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you get your podcasts. Subscribe, like the podcast, write a review, but not on today's episode because it was just me and I have a feeling it's going to be so boring to listen to. It was almost boring to talk through without anybody, you know, fun to jibber jab along with or some cool sound effects or a call in. But we could use the support. We're going to try to keep this going throughout the off season, which means less podcasts, but maybe even more fun podcasts than what we had to bite through this season. Okay. Hope to hear from you all soon. Feel free to message us on Twitter or Instagram and give us ideas for the pod. Give us things that you want to hear. Give us suggestions. Tell us what stuff you hate if you have to, if you hate anything, which I hope you don't. And we'll take it to heart, I promise. All right.